welcome to the For the Reef podcast. My name is Mitch Dender, fisheries biologist and founder of For the Reef Apparel with co-host Ian Bell.
Hello.
LFS owner and first responder. Our goal is to bring our fish nerd conversations from the fish room floor to your living room while bridging the gap between the hobby and coral reef conservation. So this week, we're pretty excited. We have our friend Brian Waugh on. And just to give you guys a little bit of background, Brian, you want to say hi?
Hello, guys.
So Brian is a, I'm calling him a financial guy at Honda dealership. Kind of your classic story of somebody gets into the hobby and it just takes off from there. He started the hobby for him in 2014. Him and his wife started the Niagara Coral Show, which is now the largest coral show in Canada. Last year they
and had, growing.
And growing. Last year they had over 1,000 people show up to the show. It's premium products. It's a really open environment. It's really, really is the premium show in Canada. And he's also a avid zoa keeper. Right now he's primarily keeping zoas, and he has over 100 different varieties. And he says he also keeps a lot of algae. he does actually sell those zoas, and he sells them on Deep Sea Zoas on Facebook. If you guys want to check out those. So yeah, we'll jump into this. Brian, welcome to the show, and thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having us.
So I kind of I've wanted to pick your brain on zoas for a while, and I know you, how humble you are, and you try to always say that you don't know what you're talking about, but I don't believe it because I can't keep zoas. And you seem to have a lot of success with them. So why don't you talk about what system you're keeping right now and what that system's looking like where you're keeping all these zoas right now?
Certainly. I have a 4-foot, 120-gallon display tank connected together with a 4-foot, 56-gallon frag tank. Both of those are plumbed into a 75-gallon sump. In a separate room. And basically I run a very simple system. I have all of your obviously typicals, your protein skimmers, things of that nature. I also run a UV sterilizer full time. I run T5HO lights with Reef Bright strips on those as well. Other than that, it's pretty simplistic. I run 3 mesh filter socks for filtration, and I run AquaChar charcoal for my charcoal filtering. Other than that, that's it.
Nice. So how many bulbs are you using for your T5s?
On my display tank, I run an 8 bulb, 36 inch system.
Nice.
And on my frag tank, I run a 6 bulb ATI.
Okay, nice. Is the 8 bulb an ATI fixture too?
It's not. I apologize. I'm having a old folk moment. I can't remember the brand of it.
Yeah, no worries. I know from the planted tank world when I was keeping a lot of T5s, ATI was one of the best fixtures you could get. Yeah, and then has the system been set up for a long time, or is it like a new system?
I set it up in 2016 when I moved to this house. It was a testament of patience. I set up the system and I ran it completely fallow for a year. So I ran all of my filtration. I ran everything in the aquarium. However, I ran absolutely nothing in it whatsoever, except for running it at cycle. And I did that for 12 straight months.
Oh, yeah. That's cool.
So it was very difficult to walk past a 4-foot dream tank and have absolutely nothing in it for an entire year.
And what made you do that?
My previous system that I had set up was a 75-gallon cube. And I had every issue known to man with that tank. Mm-hmm. And I was new in the hobby when I got that tank, and I fell victim to all of the typical rookie don'ts. and trusted the Google research as opposed to the tried and true methods that people that are in the hobby and have been in the hobby for a long time say to do. Mm-hmm. So I fell victim to wanting to do it quickly. So I tried the overnight products, if you will, and I had every issue there was. I mean, if there was a potential problem that you could have in a reef tank, I had it at least once.
Yeah.
And that tank was set up for a little over 2 years.
And so like we're talking about pests and
allergies. I had everything.
Yeah.
I had diatoms. I had, which is normal. I had algae blooms. I had bacterial blooms. I was drop in UV sterilizers, trying to kill the bacterial blooms. Mm-hmm. I had planaria. You name it, I had it.
Yeah, and that's like, so it's cool too that you even said it was a 1 year fallow period you had.
100% 1 year.
Wow. And like, that's really difficult to do. I mean, just like you said, walking by the tank and having nothing in it. But from what I've been reading, because I did like a kind of a deep dive into ick. And one of the things that came out of that was, I mean, fallow periods in general are going to kill anything that are in there. If there's nothing to feed on, obviously, then all your pests are going to go away. But when you said that, it made me think of, I mean, a lot of these pests have like a short life cycle. So, you know, they, in a year period, the line of the like genetics, so to speak, in the tank, they degrade really quickly. And then for things like ick, one of the things that I found in a paper that was like kind of blew me away was that if you had a tank and it was filled with fish and you didn't put any new fish into that system for 1 year, that the paper suggested that within that like 8 to 12 months, ick would be gone from your tank because the lines would degrade and there would be no new host to kind of start the new life cycle. And the fish kind of develop an immune system to them if they survive and they have a strong health, immune system. But anyway, that was a little off topic, but that's where my brain went. back to the zoas. There was actually, I think there's like three types, right? You have like zoanthids and palaeozoas and what's the other one called?
There's a protopally as well.
Protopally, yeah, yeah. So what is the difference between those three? Like
exact differences? I couldn't really speak to the technical side of it. I've always looked at zoanthids as the smaller heads, palaeozoas as the larger heads, and then protopallies are larger than those.
Okay. And so what's your take on the whole palaeotoxin? Is that something you've ever dealt with?
No, thank goodness. We take it very seriously though.
Yeah.
My son and myself are the zoanthid people that handle this here. My wife, not so much. My son, I've been teaching him and he knows 100% more than I do. He's done more research than I've ever done. And he's like a sponge.
Well, we should have brought on Chase.
That'll be next time. He gets a little bit nervous. He did one video with Devin Rich. Mm-hmm. And he turned into a stone. He was a little nervous. He barely moved. And I don't think he blinked.
It happened.
But he has an amazing knowledge when it comes to this kind of stuff. And so we take it very seriously. I got off topic as well. So when we do our fragging or cutting, if you will, we actually utilize a bathroom. We turn on the exhaust fan. We wear glasses. We wear gloves. We make sure that we are as safe as possible. We use new razor blades each time. We don't reuse the razor blades. We actually have a scalpel that we use with replaceable blades. And we try to do the best that we can with not cutting the animal if we can. We will do more of cutting of the frag plugs. So we try to cut where them they start to mat apart. So where the they'll start to spread their matting, mm-hmm. we'll cut down through the matting as opposed to cutting the animal. I would rather waste a 5 cent frag plug than harm the animal.
Yeah.
So I can always buy more frag plugs, and I have an ability to frag our zoas and have them be ready for the general public within a day or two of healing, as opposed to sometimes never.
Right. And it's good too. Like I'm it's a lot of people kind of brush over the is it polytoxin or poly polytoxin. Yes. Yeah, because I kind of didn't think it was that big of a deal or anything like that. And like if you read online, you'll find articles that say that it's over exaggerated and people, you know, there's not really too much to worry about. But actually, like from experience that I've seen, I've had like small, you know, reactions to it before. I think, I mean, it could be kind of anecdotal, and I can't say for sure if it was from the polytoxin. Personally, I've had, you know, itchy eyes, that kind of thing, and reactions on my skin. Who knows if that was what it was, but it seemed like it was when I was handling zoas. But I actually have a friend who got really sick from it and went to the hospital. And he actually shut down all the saltwater tanks after that. So it was serious to him. Another guy who said something recently, I saw him write it in a comment, is Jamie Craggs, who's like, you know, the coral god right now. He's doing all of the coral spawning, in situ coral spawning, and you know, spawning corals in tanks, taking them from the wild, spawning them in tanks. And now even, I think he's even bred a coral or spawned a coral that was captive bred coral that he then got to spawn. So he's very knowledgeable. He's doing his PhD and everything in this. And he wrote a comment to someone who said, why don't you do anything with zoas? And he said, we have too many students coming in and out. And the reason why he wasn't keeping them was because of the polytoxin. So if he's concerned about it, that's an all I need to be concerned about it.
Yeah, I think they need to be treated with respect.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. Yeah.
I have no desire to get sick from a hobby.
No.
Or even put myself at that potential risk. And with not having a shop where I would be cutting in a store, I have my family, I have my children inside my house, and this is a basement operation. So I take every precaution that there is. And if I can cut underwater, I cut underwater.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps. It's not going to prevent it because it can still go airborne if it is underwater, but I turn all of my pumps off if I'm cutting underwater, and I cut underwater if I can.
And is it, I'm sure charcoal can pick it out, right? Whether it's charcoal or aquachar.
Yep. It definitely can. It's not going to be harmful to the other inhabitants in the tank unless it's a heavy, heavy, heavy dose.
Right.
But there's a couple of the not so great pallies that you want to stay away from. The green button polys, they're beautiful. However, they're one of the highest concentration of polytoxin.
Hmm.
Also, it has been told to me that the red death and purple death, also the same concept, which basically we've just had a concept of if it has death in the name, we're not mm-hmm. cutting
it. Yeah. That's a good segue, because I wanted to ask what your opinion is about the naming criteria right now with zoas.
It can get a little bit obnoxious.
Yeah.
The worst part is depending on what region you're in North America will determine what they call that individual zoanthid. It's ridiculous. Pineapple Express, for instance, has Pineapple Express. It's also called Pixie Gold or Gold Dust, depending on what part of the US or Canada you're in.
Mm.
And it's ridiculous. They're all the same polythoa.
Brian, are you finding that all the zoas that you raise thrive under the same conditions, or do you have to do different things for different versions?
Typically, since my system is pretty much the same, except for flow, I keep relatively the same things. There has been one zoanthid that I have had extreme success with that mm-hmm. most people that I have talked to don't. And that has been become kind of my claim to fame, so to speak.
And that is that the campfire?
No, well, no, that one I can't keep. It keeps melting.
Oh.
I've had it 3 times and it has morphed 3 times and it has melted 3 times.
Hmm.
So I've been offered
a theory on why some do better than some don't.
There's a lot of scientific aspects of it, obviously. I don't understand it, to be honest. I've had, like, for instance, seductions, which is one of the hardest zoanthids to keep. I have probably 120 heads in my tank.
Mm-hmm.
Other people, they put it in their tank and it melts. Mm-hmm. But that's also why it goes for $120 a head. I've had people drive down from 5 hours away to buy one head of seductions.
Wow.
But I can put in a stratosphere into my tank and it'll melt overnight.
So for the average person, Brian, what are your tips for the best success as a general rule with zoas?
Keep a relatively dirty tank, so to speak. Not like physically dirty, but higher nitrates. Not a heavy phosphate count, but higher nitrates, they like it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a difficult time in my aquarium to keep phosphates because of the amount of zoanthids that I have. Zoanthids are filter feeders, mm-hmm. and they're actually naturally cleaning my aquarium all at the same time. So I have a difficult time keeping nitrates in my tank.
Right.
I'm running on average about 4 parts per million of my tank with no nitrate dumping whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Is the tank like egg crates or is it like live rock or what do you have?
I have 110 pounds of live rock in the display tank.
Okay.
In my frag tank, I run acrylic racks. I also run 2 bricks of Marine Pure. There we go. Sorry. I run 2 bricks of Marine Pure, which each brick, so they advertise, is approximately 100 pounds of live rock worth of biofiltration.
Mm-hmm.
So I run those in my sump. I run a lot of natural or biofiltration. I stay away from more of the mechanical filtration.
Yeah.
And I've had great success. Now, on the adverse side, I can't keep an SPS to save my life. Period.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
I have pristine water. I have the parameters should be perfect. If anybody ever wants to kill an SPS, just give it to me and I'll take care of it.
Well, maybe I should just frag up some stuff and we'll just put a bunch of test acros in there and
I have.
Maybe, oh, and still nothing.
Still nothing. They won't last. And I mean, I've had people come over and test my par and they're like, your par is unbelievable. Your water is unbelievable. There should be no reason whatsoever. You've got fantastic flow and it just doesn't stay. It dies. It just goes away.
Speaking of par, Brian, what are you running on your zoas? Are you running high light, low light? I know you've talked about the number of bulbs, but what's the actual par that's reaching your zoanthids?
Very, very high.
High par. Okay.
Very high par. If I remember correctly, it's been a while. I believe it was, I mean, I could be speaking incorrectly here. So if it's a number that sounds really, really off, please correct me, but I think it was 600 par at about 12 inches of water.
Holy smokes.
So it's a lot of par. So they like it. They have no problem. It takes them some time to get used to it. But once they get used to it, they're fine. So they kind of acclimate themselves to your setup.
Yeah, it's nice too when Zoas are getting lots of light, because they at least from what I can tell, they seem like they don't reach. They like stay low and
absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. If your zoanthids are stretching their necks, then there's something wrong in the setup.
Do you feed the tank at all?
I do.
What do you use?
I use Polyp Lab Polyp Booster to begin with to initiate the feeding response. And then I add reef rice.
Yeah. And it's cool too, because it's just like, it's just a cool thing to see. It's like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite times. It's one of my favorite times.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. So any fish in the system or?
Oh, yes, definitely. I have everything that's in the frag tank it has a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a Desjardins Tang. I run I've got a clownfish, two clownfish in there, because they don't get along with the clownfish that are in my display tank. So they're in there. They don't really have a purpose except for not dying. And I used to have a Coley Tang. He decided that he wanted to try to walk. It didn't work. So he's no longer in there. Then I run hermit crabs, snails, and cleaner shrimp.
Cool. And then the other thing I was thinking about was like water changes. How are you doing water changes often? Are you using RO water?
I use reverse osmosis water and deionized water.
Mm-hmm.
When I do water changes, it is done with DIO. When I have my auto top off, it pulls directly from my RO storage tank.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of twofold. The only reason I do that is because my pressure tank also is the RO for my house.
Oh, I see.
And I can't have the DI water for the house.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So that's the only, and I'm sure it's counterintuitive to top off with RO and go through a DI chamber for my water changes, but it is what it is. It works.
And then so the other, you know, obvious reason why we love to talk to you and how we got to know you, at least how I met you, was through the Niagara Coral Show.
Yes, sir.
So why don't you you're the best at describing that show. Why don't you just describe it?
Certainly. September of 2017 was when the idea kind of came to us. Coral shows in every form, whether it be a frag swap or whatever, was always on a Saturday. As you started off in our conversation today, I am in the car business, which means that I work every Saturday and have for the last 13 years. So I could never go to a coral show. So I was living vicariously through my wife and children, who were going to all of the coral shows and FaceTiming with me for me to try to figure out what I wanted to buy via FaceTime, which is not the easiest thing in the world to do. So no. Nobody ever took my hints of doing a show on Sunday. I requested everybody that I knew that would go to the coral shows to tell whoever was hosting the shows to do it on a Sunday. They never did. So that's how we kind of came up with the concept. We thought, let's do it. Let's give it a shot. And we looked at all of the other shows and built off of their groundwork that they had laid for the years that they had been doing it. This is not a new concept. And we're not the birthplace of the coral show, if you will. We just decided to take the time and the effort and build it bigger. So we decided that instead of doing it in a Legion Hall or a hall of some sort like that, we were going to rent a ballroom of a hotel.
Yeah. So
that's when I first met you, Mitch, was when you drove over from London to come to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at a hotel ballroom, and we were 2,100 square feet, when the largest show prior to that was usually around 1,000, 1,200, 1,500. So space-wise, we were big. Having said that, when the people lined up to get in, and the line was down the corner, around the pool, around the back, and it was wall-to-wall people, we thought, holy hell, we need something bigger. So we packed that room with 561 people in a 4-hour show on a Sunday.
Yeah, which is like, you know, with COVID going on.
Yeah. Yeah, now that's when we're all in jail. And...
Yeah, we all go to jail.
So we decided that we were going to take it another step forward. So we decided that we were going to try a 2-day event. And we rented a much larger ballroom for 2019, which turned into, it was 11,500 square feet. So exponentially bigger, 2 days long.
Mm-hmm.
And had we not had the snow and ice that we had on the second day, we would have had a much better turnout than we did. However, nature is nature. It is what it is.
Yep.
And then we built on top of that and decided to take it to an even larger level. And we started booking 2020, which is now going to be 2021.
Yeah.
But we're also over 30,000 square feet with two halls at the Scotiabank Convention Center. So this year, because of COVID, we've actually had to fully take the second hall. So we're actually going to be 52,000 square feet to allow for the additional walkways and spaces and social distancing that is required as of right now, mm-hmm. and most likely for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm.
So barring any issues, obviously, we will be in May, because Ian was gracious enough to switch months with us to allow us to get the heck out of winter.
Just so you understand what Brian's talking about, I run the local, well, I'm starting to run the local choral show here in London, Ontario, and that's traditionally been in May. Right. But it seemed to be mutually beneficial, and more so for Brian and everybody in the hobby, to move his into a more amicable climate, so to speak.
Yes.
To allow for easier travel and stuff, because there's some people coming from great distances.
Absolutely. We have 4 different countries as of right now coming to the show, with potential for a lot more, with people coming from as far away as, I mean, we had people come from China in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the expectation that China will be back in 2021 or future, depending on obviously travel restrictions and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot from the US. And I mean, both of you guys are exponential in regards to supporting the Niagara Choral Show. And we've kind of built a bond out of it. But off topic, apologies. Back to the show itself. We decided that we were going to just take it and run with it, so to speak. We had aspirations to build something that what we saw online from the States and saw the big shows down there.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept being told it can't be done, it can't be done, it can't be done. Well, if you have met me, then you know me. And I don't take lightly to being told I can't do something. If I prove to myself that it can't be done, then it can't be done, in my opinion. But for somebody to tell me that it can't be done if I haven't tried, tough. I'm going to try anyway. If I fail, then sure. I fail.
And not only, I gotta say this too, because it's something, I mean, at the first, at least at last year's Coral Show, it was, I mean, the event that you guys put on was full on event. It was,
yeah, it's top notch.
It's incredible. Like I tell everyone to go to the show because it's as good as any show you'll see in the States. And the other thing that I mean, there's two things. One, talking about, you know, cooperation and collaboration with all the other shows. And that's one thing that you guys have done, incredibly. It's like the show doesn't come in and stomp on everyone else and all the small frag swaps, because that's like how the hobby was, you know, that's where it was born from, out of just people wanting to share their knowledge. It wasn't about steamrolling, you know, a bigger show over the other ones. You've really worked closely with all the other shows, making sure that everyone's schedules worked and that you weren't taking a weekend that would, you know, take people away from the other shows. And I think that's something that you should be acknowledged for, because
I appreciate that. I mean, we, like I said, we came into this because we wanted to improve on what was already happening, not to take over what is happening.
Yeah. And like,
we felt that if we could build something big and cause those big companies to come in, it's going to just take everybody else with us.
And that's going to take time, but it's already being noticed. Every show you do, you can see more and more coming in from the States. I hear a lot about it being now that you hear the name Niagara Coral Show mentioned on all the big podcasts and whatnot in the States. It's getting noticed, and the more it's noticed and the more it's supported by hobbyists from here and across the border, the more likely you are to see more of these big name vendors come up and support us.
Yes, sir. I agree. It was a humbling experience for us when we went to MACNA in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And we walked into MACNA and we're walking around where my wife and I are wearing our shirts, and people saw our shirt and they recognized the name, and they're like, "Oh, you're with the Niagara Coral Show up in Canada." And we're like, "Oh my gosh. I mean, this is like, this was big time for us." I mean, we thought we were just walking in and we were going to be the dumb tourist walking around, and all inspired by all the big stuff going on, and we were noticed, and it was kind of cool. It was an experience that I'll take with me for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really like a family event. I mean, when you guys, I've seen it myself, that, you know, you've got your, you know, friends and family running around, everybody's working together. It's like, you guys crush it.
Well, it's not just that day too. I mean, for us running the smaller little regional shows, I put in some effort. It takes some time, but nothing like what the time that Brian puts into this. Mm-hmm. He's already working on the next year's show before this one's ended. And if pre-COVID, if I don't hear from Brian every couple of days and you know, get an update on what's going on, I probably send the police by to check on him. He is constantly working on it.
And anybody on Facebook that follows my show or is on any group anywhere that's saltwater related in the Northern Hemisphere has seen one of my posts shared to one of the pages somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I get overzealous with it, if you will. I enjoy it. I beat the drum till I can't beat it anymore.
And I think it's important for people to understand that this is not a like huge money making venture for you. You do this because you love it. I've seen, you know,
it's people, a labor of love.
People That's like it. To go off on their own tangents and say, "Well, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't be making money." No, it's not how it is at all, actually. And
no, not at all.
People need to slow it up and realize that you do this of your own free will. You do it on your own time, and it's not a big money making venture for you. In fact, a great amount of the money that you get gets donated.
Absolutely. We donate 25% of the door rate to a charity of, usually it's always reef related.
Yeah. That's one of the things that Brian and I have worked closely on in the past year was Brian really bought into the coral conservation that Mitch and I pushed heavily, and I introduced him to Aaron from Eco Divers, who you've heard on an earlier podcast, and they have chatted and we have chatted, and he graciously agreed to take on my cause with the Eco Divers as the sort of official charity, I guess you'd want to call it, of the Coral Show. And between that and my show and some of the other shows that are supporting it, we were poised this year in 2020 to really make a difference for them. Oh, unfortunately, that's been put on hold, and it's been frustrating because all parties involved were really excited about what we were going to do for them down there. But hey, next year's another year, and we'll get there. And we really appreciate that. You know, on behalf of Aaron, I know we really appreciate the support, and he's very much looking forward to us being able to do what we've planned to do, because it's going to do big things for them.
And out of all of the charitable benefactors that I have looked into, Aaron and the Eco Divers has been probably the most willing to work with me and talk with me openly about what they're doing, what they want to do, and where this is going to go, what it's going to do for them. And that was the big thing for me. That was the catalyst that caused me to jump on board with Aaron and have absolutely no reason whatsoever to ever pick anybody else. I have no problem being NCS 2025, being we're still with the Eco Divers. I mean, it is what it is.
Brian called me up one day and he says, tell me more about the Eco Divers. And we probably chatted for an hour and a half about
it. Oh, every bit of it.
And what I think was appealing to him was it's accessible. It's not a giant corporate entity that, you know, most of the money that's donated is going to get sucked up in administration or whatever. You send down 10 grand, it's going to get 10 grand worth of work, because most that's of right. It's done by volunteers. So we're actually making as direct a difference as we can.
We can feel like we're actually enacting change.
Sure. And you want to go down and participate, they'll let you come down and participate. You know, it's grassroots. And I think that fits all of us, right?
Absolutely. I think that's the one thing that I'm missing the most, is because we had the dive trip.
Yeah, we were all set to go.
Oh, that was May.
I was so excited.
When May happened, I was ready to cry.
Yeah. That's killing me too.
We had our tickets bought. I was going to go down and sort of, chaperone's the right word, but play tour guide to Brian, his wife, and the guests, and sort of interface between them and the Eco Divers. We had a lot of big plans in the work. And well, it's, you know, we all know about 2020.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that really makes me think too, like about how this hobby can be, you know, a driver for, you know, positive change in wild coral reefs. I mean, we all have, you know, live in Ontario, you know, landlocked Ontario, surrounded by freshwater lakes. You know, how do we get, you know, how do we build this interest in coral reef ecosystems? And it's through this hobby, which, you know, gets people to find their passion. It brings a lot of happiness to us, takes away a lot of our money. and then down the road, as we grow in this hobby, at least for us, we've now gotten into coral conservation. So it's a good reminder that, you know, these little glass boxes are our lens into the coral reefs. And, you know, you can look up the data and how much, you know, the hobby takes away and stuff. And, you know, you can debate it till you're blue in the face about whether we have an impact or not. In my opinion, from a fisheries perspective, it's a controlled fisheries. And when it's done correctly, I think that it's totally sustainable. And then the benefit is clear, that we have, you know, thousands upon thousands of hobbyists who learn about this aquatic ecosystem. It brings all this joy to their lives, and then eventually it could turn into conservation, whether in the form of directly, you know, donating money and going and doing coral conservation work, but all the way to just making decisions in their day-to-day lives about, you know, how they get their seafood, or, you know, how they live sustainably to, you know, combat climate change, or little things like that that might even be happening subconsciously. But because of that connection to the coral reefs through our glass box, it's our way of being, you know, close to the wild. And it's just a point that I feel like we always have to say, because we can, as hobbyists, we all get together and, you know, we geek out about the corals that we have in our tanks. And a lot of times, if you're not included, if you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't keep coral reef tanks, which could totally be a situation, and you're wondering, how could these guys call themselves conservationists and they have, tanks in their basement with things that came from across the world, that's the justification. You might not agree with it, and that's totally okay. But that's my take on it.
Yeah. And yeah. It's like I always say, like I think I said when our pilot episode, how I created my company to sort of be a company, but also to promote this sort of thing. And I think the coral shows are an excellent example of that. I got into this. I went to the Cayman Islands. I knew some people. I got involved. Then I came up here. I started talking about it. I started talking to customers. Then I met Mitch. He got involved with his company. Then Brian comes along. He's like, hey, we'd like to be involved. Now we have all four coral shows in this area involved in this. I got Devin from Reef Dudes came down with me. He's involved. And that's all started from one person. So we really, and bigger than that, every single person that attends one of our coral shows is making a difference, because we donate most of our proceeds to Aaron and to the coral divers. So everybody's having an impact, and it's because they have an interest in the hobby. And if everybody just tells somebody else and talks a little bit more, that's how it's going to spread.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, my entire career happened because of me buying a fish tank when I was 13 years old. So it's the reason, why I'm passionate about what I'm doing. I couldn't imagine doing something that I didn't enjoy. And it's just like, without this hobby, I couldn't imagine what my life would be like. I feel like I would have a big void in my life, not to get too deep, but it's just something that, it hits home, especially Brian's a great guy and he does all this great stuff. He's really interesting to talk to, and you could talk to him for hours, but I really appreciate what you do with the coral show, and it's a huge thing. It's a reason why we want to bring you on and talk about your show. It's not because we just love going to the show and it's super fun. We respect what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. You put in so much of your own time, and that's enough for us as hobbyists. But the fact that you've taken on sort of a noble cause on top of that just is the icing on the cake for me.
I appreciate that. I really do. As you mentioned earlier, it's a labor of love. It's not a job. If it ever becomes a job, I'll pass the torch, because the thousands of hours that are invested into preparing for this show it's mind-boggling. If I had to sit down and actually count the amount of hours that I spend, I'd go bonkers. Mm-hmm. Because when we were doing March shows, like just for instance, the 2019 show, I was prepping the show in August of 2018 for March of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So we were beating the pavement, getting all the vendors, getting all of the sponsors, getting the speakers, and we were sold out by November of 2018.
Yeah. And I gotta just say, when you said speakers, it made me, I always talk about a guy named Sanjay. I feel like I say his name every single podcast, and
Mitch has a little bit of a,
I got a little bit of a crush,
YouTube crush. Yeah.
And then, Richard Paletta, another great,
Who were supposed to be at the coral show this year,
exactly,
by the way.
And that's they have tentatively signed back on for 2021.
Awesome.
Sure. That must be a real difficult challenge, because I know how much time and effort you and, months you put into this. Now we're in COVID and we still really don't know what's going to happen.
You should see my basement.
And okay, so they go, just hypothetically, probably not realistic, but hypothetically, February comes and they say, hey, everything's good now. Now what? You've got like 3 months to pull this together.
Oh, it's
done. How have you been preparing for that?
It's done. Everything's done. The reason it's done is because we went into lockdown 7 days before the show.
Right.
So
yeah,
everything is done. The bags are done. The everything was stuffed. I mean, this, as you mentioned, as everybody's mentioned, labor of love. I turned my basement into a glorified sweatshop, and we sit down there with all of the inserts for the bags spread across the tables, and we sit there and we take turns going down the line, grabbing one of everything to stuff it in the bag, including my now 10-year-old daughter, my now 16-year-old son, my wife, anybody that I can coax into coming over to the house to do something. And everything gets boxed up and labeled. All of the door prizes, all of the raffle prizes, everything is boxed up. It's all in my basement. I have one entire wall of my basement that is cardboard boxes.
Are you going to sell tickets so say COVID, we get the green light on the show in, you know, this is really,
it's so hard to say. We're all talking hypotheticals here.
Yeah. Like, let's say the end of February, a miracle happens and they say, you guys are all good. Go ahead, do the show. We feel good. Are you going to put tickets back on sale, or do you have any plans like that way?
Yes, definitely. We removed the tickets from being for sale right when the show happened. However, short of about 15 people that requested their money back, everybody kept their tickets there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, awesome.
So they all contacted me. So I had multitudes of emails saying, hey, do I have to do anything? I'm like, absolutely not. The tickets that you bought for the 2020 event are going to be, because at that point I moved from March when COVID first happened, I moved from March to July. And then I had to postpone from July to September. And then I had to postpone from September until May of 21. And I had to do that because of my venue. My venue put a mandate in there that I had to postpone as far as I could possibly postpone each time.
Yeah.
They would not allow me to push to 21 right away. Or I was going to lose everything. And when I say everything, we were 7 days before the show. So 100% of everything is paid for.
Yeah. I want to say on Brian's behalf too, that we have a Facebook chat group with all the vendors in it, and Brian consults and talks with all the vendors on every single item. So every decision that was made, we were all included on, and Brian had our full support in all of it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And to that point, we try to keep it as transparent as possible. Everybody that is a vendor or a sponsor or a speaker, they're my friends. They're not just a number. They're not somebody, oh yeah, it's just this guy with a booth. I know the ins and outs and inner workings of their business. And I take it to heart when they have a question, they have a concern, whatever it is. I want to make sure that everybody stays friends. That's the whole point of this. I do this so I can spend the weekend with my friends. And it's just an awesome opportunity to quote unquote fish geek out for the weekend and basically drive all of our spouses nuts if they're not into the fish geek aspect of it as well. But it's just, I don't know. I could talk about this stuff for days.
I think that's the best part of all the best shows. And anybody that hasn't been able to get to some of the Reef Paloozas or MACTAs, that's my favorite part, is you go down and see people you don't get to see all the time, or you just get to talk to online, but it feels like you just saw them yesterday and you get to hang out and chat. And it's just, it's the best part of it.
Absolutely. I had an opportunity at MACNA to meet Chad Clayton.
Chad's awesome.
With Reef Nutrition. And he was the one guy that I always wanted to meet, because I always loved following what he did. And when I met him, and it was just like that, kind of like that, oh my God, seriously? And then he came over and he sat down and had lunch with us at MACNA, my wife and I. And it was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
Chad's one of those salt of the earth guys. Couldn't ask for a better guy.
Absolutely. And then in the 2019 show, I tried desperately to get him to come to the show. And he couldn't, but he did sponsor. So they got part of it. And then with the 2020 show, he jumped on board. He's like, I'm coming. I'm getting my passport. So he got his passport. And then he looked at the weather and he's like, crap, now I'm going to have to get a coat. So,
yeah, Chad lives in California.
Correct. So he was, he's a great guy. I mean, great
An awesome guy. And just to that side note there, I've approached a few companies and I haven't done so much lately, but I got to get back on it as to sort of getting involved with us at the Eco Divers as well. And Reef Nutrition was one that stuck their hand up right away and said, you know, we'll figure out a way. So we have to work on that, but somehow, some way they're going to jump on board with us. And I'm really excited about that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sweet. Well, you know, it's getting to be close to an hour here.
Ask one more question before we cut them off.
Yeah,
Mitch.
Go ahead. Yeah.
So say we return to a non-COVID world there, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, things are back to normal. We can, hopefully that is the case one day. Where do you see the show going yet? Because I kind of know what your plans are, but I thought it might be fun to sort of share that with you know, the world and
I have,
you know, let them know where this is going to go.
I have lofty aspirations.
Yeah.
I'd like to take it to a level that has never been done.
I know you had some things in the works with another group. Do you want to talk about that at all?
I'll go a little bit more benign about that.
Sure.
We're looking at potentially having a freshwater element.
Awesome. I think that'll make it huge.
Guarantee, but it's we're looking at that direction. Mm-hmm. It would not be intermixed or commingled. It would be more of a separation.
Right.
Kind of a separation of church and state, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I want people, because people that have freshwater have aspirations to have saltwater and vice versa. And
or
some
both.
People, some people have both.
Yeah.
So we want to try to have something for everybody. And
I think
we
that
want
would be
that.
Great.
I think that's a great idea too. I have both right now. I've had both my whole life. There's so many things that connect, you know, the freshwater hobbyists and the saltwater hobbyists. And I think if you're only in one side, you think that the other side is, you know, complicated or whatever. And, you know, sometimes you just need that nudge to try, because they really do offer different things. It's such a, it is kind of two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I would love to see, because I have so many friends and, you know, family members too, that, you know, they have a freshwater tank and they're really into it. I have one of my uncles was in a severe car accident. And by severe, I mean, he was hit by an 18 wheeler and you can imagine the effect that had on his life. And he's been into fishing his whole life. He knows how to ID every Ontario fish. He's been a fish guy. And he said, I want to get a fish tank. And we set one up at the house because he was kind of stuck in the house. So we set up this tank, and he has this freshwater tank in his house right now. And it is beautiful. And he spends every waking minute looking at it. Now my aunt, who you would have never thought would have been interesting, it's like her second child. In this tank, and they're obsessed. And now every time they talk to me, they're like, well, you know, maybe we should dabble in salt water. And I try to explain it, but it's something that you have to go and you have to feel and see the products, see the people, see, you know, it can be easy. It can be simple. It's, you just need the right coaching. And I think a trade show where we can kind of bridge the gap here a little bit, it's going to help a lot of people see the benefits of the other side, so to speak.
Yeah. And on top of that, just from a show point of view, the more people that come, the easier it's going to be to get some of these US companies to come up here.
Mm-hmm.
That's always it's a financial thing for a lot of them. They have to decide, is it worth the travel, the time, the bringing over? It's hard for a lot of the livestock companies to come over, but some of the product companies and stuff are a little more willing to do so. And the more we support this, the more people we can bring into it, the more will come. And the more it's getting Absolutely. Talked about, the more that are coming. I mean, you've had Tom and the Neptune Systems guys come up, Lou from Reef, Tropic Marin, Chad, there are people that are supporting it. And the more it gets talked about, like the guys on Reef News Network were going to come up, they talk about the show, it's getting known. And the more we can make it known and support it, the more that we're going to see the people that we want to see and chat with and learn from up here. So I think everybody needs to, you know, if there's a company you want to see, if there's a person you want to have talk, reach out to Brian and say, hey, can you get these guys to come up? Or what about this company? Or reach out to the company themselves and say, hey guys, we want you to come to our show. We want to see you so that they can see that there's support there, because, you know, for them, it's a business. It comes down to dollars and cents, and they need to see that there's value in it. And that is all up to all of us to support that.
Absolutely.
Are there any big vendors that you're really working on or you're hoping for or could use a little push?
Honestly, I would love to see some of the larger lighting companies come.
Yep.
They are a tougher nut to crack, so to speak.
Yeah.
I have, I know most of them by first name now, but all the phone calls and emails,
mm-hmm.
but I've been able to get them to send product. So that's half the battle.
Right.
But I just need them to take that next step. So 2020 was my catalyst show.
Mm-hmm.
That was the show to get legitimately recognized. I mean,
right. Yeah.
It was a convention center. It's massive.
Yeah. You big, wanted to show huge, the scale that it could be done on.
Yeah. Monster name speakers.
Yeah.
I had.
This year, Brian was due to have Mike Paletta, Sanjay Joshi. We had Mark Levinson lined up to come up. Devin was going to come down. Reef Dudes.
Yep.
I'm forgetting somebody.
Michael Ahrens from Aaron's.
Michael Ahrens. Yeah. Aaron Hunt from Reef Divers was going to come up from the Cayman Islands just for the weekend to talk to us. So
he was really, really nervous about the whole March weather aspect of it.
Yeah. they're kind of spoiled down there. And. You know, a little light breeze and they're wearing snowsuits.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, Ian, I think you might have just forgot somebody there.
And of course, you know, I forgot, you know, world famous fisheries biologist from the second best school in the... I've been waiting for weeks to work that joke
there
in.
It's a
joke between Mitch and I. He's like, oh, I went to the number two school and it's... If you look at our logo, I'm holding up a number two with my hand, and that's why.
Oh, that's all right. Well, just give me a second. I just need to go pull a knife out of my back. But yeah, no, I don't know. Anyway, you know, guys, Brian, I'm so thankful for you to come on here today. You know, I love talking to you. Your family is incredible. I love chatting with Chase. I love seeing everybody at the Coral shows, and I can't wait for this to happen. 2021 is going to be a monster year for the Coral show. And, we just had 1 year to just, we got to do what's right from a health perspective.
Absolutely.
And the show is going people's, to be even bigger.
Brian's taking that stance through the whole thing. Everybody's health is more important. So,
yep. Totally.
You know, whatever we can do, Brian, to help support the show and everybody out there, whatever you can do to support the show, it's only going to get better with your support. So please get behind it.
That's right. And that goes for all of the shows. I mean, as a hobbyist, if you like seeing the shows, you like being able to go out and have 10 or 12 or 15 or 20 or 40 or 50 vendors all in one room, support the show. Go out and buy a ticket. Go to the show. All of the shows. There's 4 shows in Ontario that have the full support of myself and the Niagara Coral Show. That would be
We've obviously kind of created a little group between ourselves, and we all work together very closely.
Absolutely. So we've got obviously London, which is going to be March of next year. That'll be the first one of 2021.
We think.
Hopefully, fingers crossed. I'm basing this off of a non-COVID 21.
Yeah.
Then obviously the Niagara Coral Show in May.
Yep.
And then it falls into around September, and that would be the Brantford Coral Show in Brantford, Ontario. And then usually into end of October, beginning of November, and that is the Kitchener Waterloo Show.
Mm-hmm.
So
there are all the regional shows here in Southern Ontario.
Absolutely. They are phenomenal shows. I go to each one of them. I buy tables. I go to the support. I go to purchase from the other vendors. They're all they're all my friends. Everybody that goes as vendors are at their show. They're at my show. And like I believe Mitch said earlier, I have no secrets on how I do things.
Nope, and neither do we.
I share whatever I can share. I push and I prod and I get as many of the vendors that deal with me to deal with them. Because
ultimately it comes down to all of you out there. The shows get better and more vendors come and everything improves because you come and support them.
That's exactly right.
It's kind of a group thing.
That's exactly right. Go buy a ticket to all of the shows. It's only going to get better.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. Number two.
Yeah. I mean, also on that note, let's go into different red zone, blue zone, whatever, yellow zone, whatever zone we're in right now. Make sure, you know, get out there and support your local fish stores and support this hobby during this time. You know, if we're just sitting inside, we might as well be staring at some sweet fish tanks. So I had to say that.
Yeah, everybody's doing the best they can to make a living and carry on and, you know, support your local fish store because, you know, I know we all appreciate it.
Yep, for sure.
Absolutely. So, well, gentlemen, thank you very much for having me on. It's been truly my pleasure.
Yep, thank you very much, Brian.
And I look forward to many more of these to come.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll have maybe you on again. Can get my son involved and
Get Chase on here, and once we, you know, sort of know what's more going on and things start to change, we'll have you on here again and talk about, okay, it's happening. This is what we're going to do, and you know,
fantastic,
and get the word out there.
And as a reminder to everyone who's listening, you can find the For the Reef podcast on Facebook, on Instagram. You can find Ian at Sustainable Marine Canada. You can find me at For the Reef Apparel, Conservation Apparel. Brian, you can find him on the Niagara Coral Show on Instagram, on Facebook. You can find Deep Sea Zoas on Facebook, where you can buy his zoanthids. And you can always reach out to us by email at fortherefpodcast@gmail.com. So that's where we'll leave it. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you very much.
And till next time.
Stay safe, everyone.
Yep. We'll be right back.